This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne.
Yes,
and
sir.
Thank you for joining us on your lunch hour. We're here Monday through Friday on weekdays talking about local issues in Marion and Polk County, things that affect Salem and Kaiser and the greater area here in the Mid-Willamette Valley, and it's a fabulous day.
It is.
It's another fabulous day to be living in the Mid-Valley.
It's the first day of spring.
Is it? Oh, that's awesome.
Well, it feels like it all of a sudden.
Right.
It all of a sudden, it was like huddling in the freezing cold and can't go outside and do stuff too. Oh my gosh, I got to plant things right now.
Right?
Right.
And all the trees start blooming.
I hope a lot of Salemites went to the Home and Garden Show put on by the local Home Builders Association last weekend. I was hoping to get, actually reaching out to a landscaping company to talk about what people are doing, what they should be doing, at what time of year. So a lot of that great stuff with spring, and it's So welcome. All right. So, folks, we're going to talk about a few topics today, kind of piggybacking back on Monday. Some things in the news we did not get to. It's about training school kids how to prepare for the big quake.
Which isn't really a bad thing.
No. There's a question about... I don't know. We'll talk about it. So at least an effort to. And the schools, of course, I'm like, well, what part of education do you want us to take out to plug this in, and where are the resources going to come from and so forth? Also, telecommuting. I think we'll start the hour on this telecommunity article. It's kind of funny, and it's related to how government tends to solve its problems. And we want to talk more about the public employee unions. This news, it just came out this week. And again, looking for ways for the unions to maintain their stronghold on how much campaign contributions they can collect from their members.
Yeah, we just talked about that Thursday or Friday, didn't we?
Yeah, some workarounds. There's news this week. A new bill. New efforts, and especially interesting is the Oregonians' coverage of it and the language that is used. So stick with us. We're going to talk about that a little bit later in the hour. So obviously, Dave can't telecommute. He needs to be here
right
at the station. Many of us can't, but a lot of jobs you can. A lot of jobs, and that, hey, if you're telecommuting, that's one less car in traffic for me. I got nothing against telecommuting.
Right.
All right, but then it doesn't work for all professions, and it doesn't work for all personality sorts, because some people, you know, they're going to be tempted by daytime TV, they're going to be tempted by the dog needing to go for a walk, and there's going to be distractions. Maybe there's a sick kid at home, all these things. Telecommuting does not work for every personality.
True.
Some people need, you know, in some office, the office environment. And you're bouncing ideas off one another, and you're comparing how people's projects are going and how that intersects with yours and this and that. So there's two things. Is it a profession that works with telecommuting? And also, is it a personality that works with telecommuting?
Yeah.
And how do you feel, Dave, about a government worker telecommuting?
Depends on the job.
Depends on the job. All right, so they were, and it was relatively new back in the 90s.
That's
1997, this was instituted to allow telecommuting for government workers. And it was somewhat of an experiment because the internet is pretty young in 1997. So it feels like we've always had it, right? So, yeah. The dial-up, you know, you can just hear it. They're signing in to telecommute on their AOL line or something. All right. So there was a law passed allowing telecommuting for government workers. Okay. I believe it was Senate Bill 775, if you want to Google it. But Department of Administrative Services, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's a large agency, and they oversee all the administration stuff gets dumped into there. And the Department of Energy were required to report on how it's going. And I assume that report would be, how have you found efficiencies? How many people signed up for it? Do you think the work is getting done collaboratively? You know, a report on a thing. So, and this is a little bit old. This is a couple of weeks ago. But what's interesting is the reaction. So,
okay.
Because it comes out of the news that no one ever filed the report.
Well, what?
It's been 20 years and somebody said, and somebody was doing some research and they're like, okay, could we see the most recent report? And everyone's scratching their head like, report? We've never done a report.
Wow.
Required by the statute. And then thrown out there to the Department of Administrative Services. They just literally never filed the report. So now
that's
they're like,
crazy.
What do we do?
File a report, maybe?
What do we do? So I have more faith in the private sector and being able to determine about whether or not this is working in a collaborative, productive, cost-effective way.
Right.
Right? Not against it at all. I mean, cars off the highway, I'm all right with that, right? We are the third largest state in the country in telecommuting.
Oregon is?
Yeah. Third largest state in the
country. Wow, yeah, that's impressive.
It's big.
Yeah.
We like to get out of our greenhouse burning fossil fuel, destroying cars and telecommute. And we have some high tech, et cetera. The state's still trying to encourage it. I mean, DS.
Telecommuting.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's interesting about that is, well, they're encouraging it, but they don't have any data to see if it's working. Where's the science? Where's the math? Is one of Brent's favorite topics. Where's the math? Where's the science? You know, are you having to have, how is it working, especially in things that might be collaboratively required?
Sure.
Does it take longer for projects to get done or less time? Right? Or you have fewer days out of the office, fewer sick days. There's so many things that it intersects with.
Sure.
Sick days, are you doing conference calls? Are you doing video conferencing? What are the cost factors of this thing? Yeah. All these things.
Because it costs to have the software to telecommute. I guess you could do it free on Skype or something like that, but still, you know.
You're probably just logging into a system, you know, into a computer system, whatever it is.
And work remotely.
Yeah. All right. So what is interesting to me about it is how they're responding to, oh, oops, my bad, we haven't been doing what the law requires for 20 years. The response? Let's find a workaround. Let's find a way. Can we go back to the legislature and find a way that we're no longer even required to do it? Then we'll just call it good.
No.
Okay, so that's my problem with it. That's something we should be paying attention to, folks. Again, we have a citizen legislature, and they're being asked to make administrative kind of, you know, decisions that they're not necessarily qualified to do. Right. Somebody should say, hey, what about accountability? This is the government. This is the taxpayer. Da, da, da. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have government workers telecommute. I am saying there should be brackets around it. And there needs to be some accountability or at least some math, some science to say this is working.
Or not.
Yeah. So in my department, we have 30 people. Or we used to have 30 people. And now we have 25 and half of them telecommute. And we're getting all the work done. Well, that's persuasive.
Yeah, that's good.
All right. But what if it's the opposite? What if it's, well, we used to operate this on 25 people, but now that we have half of them telecommuting, I really need 30 people. I don't know what the answer is. And the problem is the government doesn't know what the answer is.
Because nobody's filed a report.
Nobody's filed a report in 20 years. So
if I didn't do that, I'd lose my job.
Yeah, most of us would.
Yeah.
You have to, and hopefully, you know, they've got managers and hopefully somebody's paying attention. But if the state's encouraging it, and they're encouraging those managers and all those departments to let people telecommute, where's the accountability? Because, well, I can encourage them to telecommute, but we're paying them the same amount of money as someone who comes in every day and hammers out the work and, you know, comes up with the best ideas and spreads them all over the office. I don't know. All right, something to be talking about, something to watch. We're always encouraging you to watch your government and provide your feedback to your state representatives, your state senators, your local newspapers even.
Right.
Letters to the editor. Please don't try to change the world on Facebook.
No, that's not the place to do it.
But, you know, everyone's
got a question, though, about this. Is it possible that the managers that were around when that was passed to file the reports moved on and just didn't tell anybody, and so the new managers came in and didn't know about it? Is that possible?
That's very generous of you, Dave.
I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt.
Problem is they never filed a single report. They never once filed a single report.
So managers that knew about it shortly thereafter left before that year came up, that they had to file the first report, that nobody knew about it, maybe?
Yeah, I'm sure that's what happened.
That's the scenario I jumped to.
It was the Kitzhaber years, so we know that there was no leadership and there was no accountability. So...
Yeah. Okay.
Right. All right. Sorry, Governor John, but we're gonna take a break here. A little bit about school kids learning about earthquakes, and then we're gonna dive into again how this is related and how does the government respond to things that aren't going their way, or in this case, the public employee unions. So stick with us. Hey, you're listening to Brent and Dave on Newsmakers 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
What's the best-selling small tractor in America? Kubota's BX Series Subcompacts. No other subcompact tractors on the market have so much versatility designed to fit in your garage. And if you're looking to mow right now, a 54-inch mower deck is included. Get a BX 1880 for as low as $99 a month with 0% APR financing for 84 months. Now through March 31st, 2019. See us or go to KubotaUSA.com for more information.
See Lynn Benton Tractor just off Highway 34 and 99 East and Tangent and online at LynnBentonTractor.com.
Cheryl, spring is here and it's time to stop talking about toasty toes.
Okay, let's talk about how our crews work under the house to remove and replace damaged insulation and how Total Comfort can blow insulation into existing attic and walls to make houses warmer in the winter and cooler in the summer. Total Comfort can install new windows and siding to make your house beautiful. Do you know what this means?
No.
Next winter, our customers will have toasty toes.
Cheryl, call Total Comfort or see us online at TotalComfortSalem.com. Voted the best for a reason.
Hi, this is Mike Frith with 1430 KYKN. You've been hearing my ads about Willis Dental in Salem. I needed serious dental work done when I went to see Dr. Willis. After evaluating my situation, we agreed on a plan and put it in motion. The results were nothing less than phenomenal. I've got my big Irish smile back.
Oh, and it's a big, beautiful smile it is.
And I can chew with no pain. The whole staff was considerate and compassionate. If you need dental work, don't put it off another day. Give Willis Dental a call or see them at Willis Dental. WillisDental.net.
What's happening with your money? Financial Focus Radio Show answers all your financial questions every Sunday from 3 to 5 right here on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening. Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management Partners Tyler Simonis and Troy Reinhardt discuss what's happening in equity markets, break down portfolios, discuss companies, and bring you the truth in wealth building. Financial Focus Radio Show every Sunday 3 to 5 right here on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening. You can also catch all the past shows on financialfocusradio.com.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne here at KYKN. And we're talking about local issues in the news that are affecting you or affecting our community and certainly affecting our state. So thanks for joining us. We were talking before the break about some efforts to telecommute and document that. I thought that was amusing. Some other things are happening in the news. Some information about... some legislators want our schools to educate our kids on preparing for a Cascadia earthquake event, type event, natural catastrophe.
Not bad.
Huge emergency and so forth.
Well, every kid should be prepared for that.
Yeah, we've all ducked under a chair,
well,
right?
Yeah, fired. Not a little good that did, but.
Yeah. Fire drill. I was born in the Midwest, so we did not just the, hey, that's going to be a nuclear bomb, duck and cover, but we also did, you know, tornado. Prep, and we've learned about
important.
What to do in case of a tornado and so forth. And here, all right, so the statistics say 40% chance we're going to have this massive earthquake in the next 50 years. So if you're 70, you may worry about less than if you're 20.
Mm-hmm.
I do not discount that it may happen in my lifetime, and I think absolutely it's going to happen in my kid's lifetime.
Sure.
That's how I feel about it. And it's going to be massive. It's not a small earthquake. This is not going to be small.
They're saying it would liquefy Portland.
PDX, at least. I've heard that.
Wow.
Yeah, the liquefaction, because it's so close to the river and so forth.
Well, so is Portland, and so is Salem.
Yeah, it's going to be a mess.
Any city next to the river.
This event can't be overstated. There's so much hype in media and everything, yeah, right? Everything, but really the size of this earthquake is monumental.
So it wouldn't be a bad idea to maybe have a survival class for every student in school.
Yeah, I like it. So Paul Evans, state representative, West Salem and Independence, he's supportive. So we'd love to get him on the show. I've reached out to Representative Evans' office to see if he wants to talk about it. More training with the school kids. And so here's the flip side. Since I love to be devil's advocate, and I love to watch the public dollar, I love to watch the public's pocketbook. I say that. My wife says, don't say pocketbook. That's too old-fashioned. You got to say wallet.
Yeah. All right. How about bank account?
Bank account. The change in our pockets. All right. So my question is then, is it the school's job? I'm all for emergency preparedness.
Yeah.
I am 100% for that. But is it the school's job? Or is it something that the school could partner with? You know, could emergency management people come out of their budget, not our education budget, and do a school event, a teacher education event, do the curriculum of learning, all of these things, and then bring it to the schools?
An idea, but I think
maybe the education community can house this education and house this training, but not necessarily do it. So here's my concern: how many hours our kids spend in school,
right,
over the school year? Oregon is not a leader, right?
No, and how they need many to spend more
instruction
time.
Hours that they get, and over the years, I had many talks about this over the years about how we have. Over time, put more and more social services into our schools. Okay? Well, the kids are there. A lot of kids in lower income, they need dental work. So we're going to bring in the dental work. We're going to bring in special needs counseling. We're going to bring in this. We're going to bring in that. We're going to teach them about sex. We're going to do, all of these things. And now there's less instruction time.
Yeah.
And now we want them to, let's plop our kids down here and then plop them out as full-fledged adults, and they get to learn everything at school and not necessarily from the parents. All right, so now we want to add one more thing. So that's my warning sign. It's like, you're going to add one more thing, but you're going to take it away from instructional time. And are you going to ask the Department of Education to teach the teachers how to do it? I mean, is it the school district's job to teach us to be self-reliant and prepared in a case of an emergency?
Home ec class.
There you go.
They need to bring that back.
Home ec class. I like that. Or to house it, like the DARE program.
Yeah.
They didn't have to do any, they had a DARE officer, and it came out of police budget.
Right.
The police budget provided the DARE officer and company of the presentation. So you lose a little of instruction time, but it's not necessarily on the backs of, the school district to do this good societal thing.
And the kids like to see the police officer. Why don't they bring in a firefighters?
Even a lunch, a firefighters, yeah.
Yeah, teach that.
A lunchtime gathering in the gym, one of those things. But anyway, all right, so not a bad idea. How it's going to play out will be, we'll see how it's administered, right? And here's the thing about it is promoting self-reliance. That being prepared is our job. Don't just sit there and wait for FEMA to come.
Mm.
Folks, we talked about this. We had Marion County's emergency management
here
a month or so ago. It's really important that we take it upon ourselves. This is going to happen. You have to have a way to sterilize water and survive for a couple of weeks.
At least.
You have to be able to eat. You need to be able to feed your child. You have to have formula for a baby. You have to have these things and be prepared for the earthquake.
And medications.
So every person that can take care of themselves allows the first responders to take care of those in most need.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The injured, the immobile, and the very young. And the more of us that take care of our own stuff, the better. So
what did he say? It was like... at least 4 days or something like that before anybody in the emergency department could even get to you.
Yeah, they say have at least a week. And he
at least a week, yeah.
He thought that was low.
Really?
Yeah. You should try to assume. I was
trying to remember what he said.
That no one's going to bring you shelter. No one's going to bring you water. No one's going to provide you food for 2 weeks.
Well, that's right. It was 2 weeks.
Yeah. So, folks, we need to do that. We need to be part of the solution. And that's the best thing you can do for all of your neighbors.
Yeah.
And everybody in your microcosm of our community is be prepared yourself. So I'm 100% on board on the education of not just the kids, but grown-ups as well. SEDCOR did a great series on this about a year ago. They did a series of three lectures or events. But it's the onus is upon us.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm all for the education. That's great. And it's just always a caveat about which taxpayer dollar bucket is it going to come out of and how much more do we tax our teachers. So a lot of people don't realize, as critical as I am sometimes of public employee unions, which of course includes the teachers union.
That's true.
I'm married to a teacher and I'm the son of a teacher. And I think it's an extremely noble profession. And sometimes, you know, the conservative part of me is, I want instruction time. I want instruction time. I want them to learn the math. I want them to learn their social
basics.
Studies. I want them to learn. And so some of these things that detract from learning, which whole nother conversation, it could be a lot of trouble about having kids in the classroom who want to learn and are able to learn. All right. Do we have time to start the next topic?
No.
Okay. How about just a little hit?
Okay.
All right. Little hit. Out of Arkansas. Bill out of Arkansas, because this intersects with some things we're talking about on Newsmakers. The governor already signed it. It's not even a proposal. And it prohibits cities and counties passing regulations that increase the cost of housing.
Huh.
So, again, you know, we're hammering, hey, Oregon, hey, legislature, hey, Portland, stop doing regulations that increase the cost of housing.
Yeah.
And then scratching your heads and throwing your arms up in the air and going, woe is us, our housing is not affordable.
Right.
Stop it. So in Springdale, there was a law passed regulations passed, and they didn't want builders to use vinyl siding, aluminum siding. They didn't want them to use this material, that material, blah, blah, blah. There's a whole list of things that they can regulate and design standards. Well, they said, the state finally said, you know what? Housing's expensive. We can't be doing this regulation thing and it just further driving up the cost and driving more people out of the ability to own their own home.
That's true.
So just wanted to point it out in case any legislators and regulators are listening. Look at Arkansas. They said, hey, this is a problem. Cities, counties, jurisdictions, you're prohibited from passing laws and design standards that raise the cost of housing.
That's a pretty good thing.
I like it.
Yeah.
It goes back to the inclusionary zoning in Portland, where they wanted multifamily developments of 20 units or more to include all these low-income components. Must be affordable for 80% of medium income, blah, blah, blah. And then
regulations.
Yeah, people didn't want to build them.
And then parking.
Nobody took out the permits.
Right.
All right. It's a slight exaggeration, folks, but
not really.
Suddenly, fewer and fewer buildings, nothing like what they need, are being built. And they regulated themselves out of supply. You have no supply. What happens? The prices go up, and then they're scratching their heads like, why is housing so expensive in Portland?
And people leave.
All right. Looking at Arkansas. We're going to take a break here. We're going to come back. There's campaign reform on the docket. There is something having to do with public employee unions. We'll probably spend the rest of the hour on that. And it's related to a national union issue as well. So stick with us. You're listening to Brent and Dave on Newsmakers, 1430 KYKN, Salem's Listening.
Time now for your Capital Toyota Message of Hope from Liberty House.
Stewards of Children is a class to help adults learn how to prevent child abuse. This two-hour class will be available for free in the month of April and offers helpful information about how we can help prevent child abuse. Call Liberty House to learn more, 971-599-5876.
This has been your Capital Toyota Message of Hope from Liberty House. Find out more online at libertyhousecenter.org.
Here's Hunter with your HalfPriceOregon.com deal of the day. You should read the Busick Court menu for breakfast and lunch. Rachel Ray did, and she loved Busick Court. Today, you can buy an $8 Busick Court gift certificate for just $2.88. You heard me right. $8 Busick Court gift certificates are only $2.88, but you can only find this deal at halfpriceoregon.com.
Thanks, Hunter. Find this deal and much more at halfpriceoregon.com.
The skills you can develop as a soldier in the Army National Guard can give you an edge in the high-tech job market of tomorrow. The Guard offers career training to take advantage of your skills in science, technology, engineering, and math that can help give you a leg up to a high-paying and rewarding STEM profession. Get a head start on your career while earning money to pay for college. Log on to NationalGuard.com to learn about all of the STEM career opportunities in the Army National Guard.
Sponsored by the Oregon Army National Guard. Aired by the Oregon Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Why is the Lighting Gallery Salem's most trusted source for every lighting need? With over 50 years of lighting the Willamette Valley, our 100% non-commissioned salespeople take the time to guide you through Oregon's largest lighting selection. With a number of our specialists having over 20 years of experience, you will not find a more knowledgeable staff. And with our no-nonsense low-price guarantee, we will not be undersold, even by the internet. So get the service you deserve and the prices you will love at the Lighting Gallery, 25th and McGillcrest, next to the Salem Airport, and on the web at lightupsalem.com.
I'm here with Rich Kansky, owner of Green Acres Landscape. Rich, why has Green Acres Landscape been able to excel for more than two decades now?
You know, our mission to people is to provide an unequaled landscape solution to every client while respecting and protecting the environment. We talk about leaving no footprint. This is a reference to how we complete a job and how we have a positive impact on the environment. We talk about because we care. We care about the product we are giving our customer, we care about the community we live in, and we care about our employees.
And what is Green Acres Landscape doing now to continue to be the best landscape company in our community?
It starts with our continued employee retention and their dedication to our customers, community, and our company. Our commitment to education, training, and leadership enables us to provide a unique landscape solution that relates to people's lifestyles. In the end, we have a culture that cares about all aspects of our projects and surroundings.
The mission of Green Acres Landscape is to provide an unequaled landscape solution to each client while always respecting and protecting the environment. Green Acres Landscape, leaving no footprint.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by the fine folks, the Color Tile of Salem.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. We're talking things happening at the Capitol right now that are affecting us.
There's a lot of things going on at the Capitol that they're just trying to get under the radar.
Yeah. Well, there's so many bills. We were talking about it on Monday. And now, as promised before the break, we have to talk about the workaround. Earlier in the hour, we were talking about how the government agencies were trying to create a legislative fix, a workaround, a requirement they had not been adhering to for 20 years. And now, in the wake of this union decision, which allowed people to no longer pay into the union dues in the union coffers for campaign contributions.
Which is a right they should have.
Yep. Anyway, in light of that and the loss of union membership, they're trying to find a legislative workaround.
Yeah, right.
Right. This you were reading this news in the news this week, thanks to the Oregonian.
And today. That was today.
Thanks to the Oregonian for covering this. I thought it was a lot of good information in there. You can find it online, hopefully. I mean, usually we're looking for our Mid-Valley with news on the Statesman Journal. And, of course, the Salem Reporter, Brent's favorite.
Right.
That's a good publication.
Full, in-depth, both sides.
They really flesh it out. So you might get less breadth of coverage in terms of number of articles you're going to get on how many topics. But what they do cover, they really do flesh it out. They show both sides. It doesn't seem very biased. I don't know. Good stuff. And you can find their news feed actually on KYKN.com. So it's not why I'm promoting them. Brent just likes them. You know, and I like to see, frankly, I think it makes the Statesman Journal up their game.
It does.
There was time.
Competition always makes you better.
Last summer, I said, Statesman Journal, I'm breaking up with you. but I think they are actually better than they were a year ago. And so, yeah, again, competition makes you better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any rate, whatever it is, this is the Oregonian. So we want to thank and credit the Oregonian for the article. And it has to do with Democrats passing a bill out of committee. Party line vote. Party line vote. Who do you think voted the way that the public employee unions wanted them to vote? That would be the Democrats. 98% of union contributions go to Democrats.
Wow.
Now, do you think 98% of union members, be it in the schools or anywhere else, are Democrats?
Probably not.
Therein lies the problem, folks, where the union pretends it's doing the work of the populace in the membership, but they're not taking into account anybody in the membership that doesn't think far left wing.
Not at all.
So, anyway, so the bill was passed. And this new bill, housekeeping, they call it. The Oregonian actually called it, referred to it as a union wish list. I think it was the quote from.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, the opponents call it a union wish list, but it was right in the title. And it has things like they have to allow employees some time and some resources to work on collective bargaining things. So if you're working and you're a member of a union, you're working for a public entity. You can use the email system. You might be able to use the facility to have meetings. You might be able to have a certain reasonable amount of time to work on these things that are not in your job duties. If it's towards
during your work,
yeah. Yep, reasonable amount of time access
what?
To, and then these unions get access to employees' work and personal information, and they are trying to broaden how many different ways they get a yes. I'll be a membership. I'll be in your membership. Which is a little scary.
Yeah.
And this does connect with something I've been at odds with for a long time with on the federal level. And this goes back. It's died off a little bit, but it's always lurking out there. It's referred to as card check. And we've been talking about this for about 10 years. So I'm going to circle around and bring this back to the Oregonian article. But on the national stage, card check was a drive because nationwide unions were losing members. And they wanted an ability to organize, right, and to get votes in workplaces to unionize, right?
Okay.
All right. So what's more sacred in America than a confidential vote, your confidential ballot? And that's the law of the land.
Right.
If you want to unionize, people want to vote in the workplace for a union issue, either to unionize or a union issue. It has to be a confidential ballot.
It always should be.
That's not broken. Yet, what the unions wanted was something referred to card check that you could be approached and say, hey, Dave, how'd you vote?
What?
Let me see your card.
No.
Right. This sounds really, really sinister to me. I'm picturing, dock workers out in the parking going, hey, Johnny, let me see that card.
Right.
You're going to vote with us, right?
No intimidation there.
No.
Jeez.
There needs to be zero intimidation.
Yes.
There needs to be zero potential for intimidation. And they were literally, let me check your card. We want to know how you voted. That is ridiculous. It's abhorrent. That when Kurt Schrader was part of it, I'm favoring this, I just beat my head against the wall. There's certain things he says I can go with. I understand where you're coming from. And certain things I agree with and this and that. When he says he's going to vote, he would vote yes on card check. I'm like, wow, that's horrible.
Yeah. I mean, that's reminiscent of communist days.
Yeah. Yeah. That's to me, it sounds a lot like organized crime.
Yeah, that too.
That's how organized crime gets its foothold in labor unions.
Yes.
Right? So... In America, folks, sacred is a private, confidential vote. I get to vote. You don't get to have a say. So to get phone calls at home, after work on your cell phone, to get emails from your union, organizers at home when you're not on the clock, to get them at work, there's so many more opportunities for abuse and undue influence. So to me, those are huge red flags.
Yes.
Right? All right. So cycle back from card check and back down to Oregon. This House Bill 2016-2016 requires public employers. Now they're trying to do the workaround, right? And to deduct union dues and fees from the paychecks, and then send that money to the union. So people, yes, you heard that right. The bill would take public employers, your school district, your city, the state of Oregon, it would collect the union money and pass it to the union.
Without your say-so.
Before you got your check.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
So it's going to make it easier for employees to opt in. Those are air quotes.
Yeah.
You know, telephone, email, writing to opt into their union. So they get virtually, this is, yeah, an incredible access to all that information for employees and so forth. But to be the union's collection agency, the union fund collection agency, that's what you want your government to do? And that all of the Democrats think this is a good idea. Well, why is it a good idea? Because 98% of contributions from unions go to Democrats. Mm-hmm. This is a problem, folks. I've talked about it Monday. I talked about it over and over again. I don't care what party you are. You have to see that this is a disconnect in responsibility. It's not. It's either good public policy or bad public policy. But if you're going straight down the party line, it's going to be hard to argue that this isn't about something else. Right?
Yeah. You should always have a right to get in or out of a union.
Well, yeah, and I don't, you can't have the role of governance to collect union money for them on their behalf and to do it pre-paycheck.
Yeah, that's wrong.
On their behalf and then forward it to the unions.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed it said dues and fees. And some of that money, of course, goes into getting more Democrats elected. So the public policy of the unions cannot be the exactly same thing as public policy of our state legislators.
No, it can't be. Wow. And I have a problem with them working on union things on work time.
Yeah.
That should not be happening during work.
Yes.
We paid them to do a job. You want to work on things for the union, you do it on your own time.
A couple things from the article. Representative Greg Barreto, he's a Republican. And he's like, in my opinion, this is a quote, in my opinion, this is an obvious maneuver by the majority party to give unions a power grab.
Oh, yeah.
So there are a lot of things having to do with collective bargaining and so forth. Yeah. It's scary.
So when the Supreme Court makes a ruling, somebody tries to come up with a way to get around it.
United States Supreme Court.
Yeah, exactly. The big,
right?
Big Supreme Court.
Saying you cannot force them to be members and you cannot force them, you cannot confiscate their money for your political action.
And this,
I love it.
And they think that this is going to fly?
It's passed out of committee. Passed it out of committee, and that means it's going to go to the floor. Who controls the floor? Who's got the supermajority in the House and the Senate?
Can't the Supreme Court step in and say, hey, we said no, you can't do this?
Well, unfortunately, you know, if they do pass it, you have to rely on organizations like the Freedom Foundation. We had Aaron with on, and he's quoted in the article, and we'd like to have him back. he's the one that calls this a union wish list that just, you know, targets them and all their outreach efforts to communicate. And it's much harder for him to communicate with all these public employees and union members. He doesn't get access to all of these things.
No.
The anti side doesn't get fair play against the
union. No, not at all.
Hey, all right.
That was in the bill, too.
We're going to come be right back. Scary stuff, in my opinion. That's scary stuff. But thanks for joining us. We got one more segment before your noon hour is over. You're listening to Brent and Dave on Newsmakers 1430 KYKN, Salem's Listening.
You know, spring is right around the corner and the air will be fresh and renewed. If you have allergies, you need to call Home Comfort, Inc., a Lennox dealer right here in the Mid-Willamette Valley, and ask them about their air purifying systems. Right now, you can save up to $1,700 in rebates when purchasing qualifying Lennox equipment. Make the air perfect in your home with Lennox and Home Comfort. Visit HomeComfortInc.com for more information. That's HomeComfortInc.com. CCB 113253.
Hi, I'm Jaden. My husband Chris and I own Synergize Auto here in Dallas, Oregon. We always have a great selection of quality pre-owned vehicles and power sports, and you'll be working directly with us, always. We are a non-pressuring, easy-to-work-with, and family-owned company. We offer financing options, take trade-ins, and do consignments. See our inventory at SynergizeAuto.com. That's SynergizeAuto.com. Find us on Google to see what customers are saying. We're all about service and being a dealership you can trust.
Nature isn't the only force that can leave its mark, especially when you have a tractor built to help make your property your own. The Kubota BX80 series gets any job done right. Dig, mow, haul, and comfortably maneuver in tight spaces. Get a BX80 tractor for zero down and 0% APR financing for 60 months. Now through June 30th, 2019, see us or go to KubotaUSA.com for more information.
Visit Rick Riall Farm Supply at 130 Main Street in downtown Rick Riall or online at rickfarm.com.
I love hauling wood, pulling trailers, and getting dirty. But it takes a lot out of this old truck. Time for a little oiling, some truck TLC. I love a good spa day.
You need Jiffy Lube's signature service oil change with conventional oil for only $29.99 with coupon. Plus, Jiffy Lube will check all your fluids, check and fill your tire pressure, and more. Do more in a jiffy. Get your coupon now at JiffyLubeOregon.com.
Ask for Pennzoil Motor Oil when getting a Jiffy Lube signature service oil change. Not just oil, Pennzoil.
Don't you know that breakfast is the most important meal of the day? This is Jim Madden, owner of Busick Court Restaurant in downtown Salem. Yes, breakfast is the meal that gets you going every day, but lunch is just as important. And if you haven't been in for lunch, we've got the menu you've got to try. All of our hamburgers and chicken fried steaks are made fresh with certified Angus beef every day. Come on in, give us a try. We open at 6:30 a.m. on weekdays, 7 a.m. on Saturday, and 8 a.m. on Sunday. We close each day at 2 p.m., and we're located at 250 Court Street in downtown Salem. Ask us about our catering. We look forward to seeing you.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, is every weekday at noon for 1 hour. We'll discuss issues that affect the Mid-Valley. It's common sense, facts, and not-so-in-your-face local talk. It's Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage company, Color Tile of Salem, and Kennedy Tax Solutions on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart along with Dave Bourne, and we're talking about things you should know about.
Definitely.
Honestly, what's happening at the Capitol between employer and employees? We're wrapping up on that. And we talk a little bit about, because it's coming into the forefront again, another push for campaign finance reform.
Who's pushing?
There's some members of both parties. There's a few of them signing on. There's a House bill. There's a Senate bill. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Just the last thing is on the union thing, and I think that if you're a regular listener to Newsmakers, you know I am not a union basher, although I'm not extraordinarily a fan of how they operate in modern day.
Sometimes questionable.
But public, we always have to draw the distinction between public bargaining units,
mm-hmm.
Which I think have a right to exist, play an important role, and politics. So Most of us that work for somebody, we can go to our boss. When we go to an administrator, we go to the boss's boss, we go to the owner of the company. What the union leaders do is they go to the legislators, they go to lawmakers. They're not going to the DAS, they're not going to the Department of Administrative Services, they're not going to the head of Department of Energy or Aviation or whatever it is, housing. Whatever it is, they're not going to administrators, they're going to politics. And they want to get their way through money and politics, which is tied to, again, a union doesn't necessarily represent what its membership wants.
True.
I will never be a member of AARP. Right?
Right.
The reason is because they have an agenda. They exposed who they were in the 90s with Hillary Care, when their members were wholeheartedly against it. Overwhelmingly against it by poll, but then they jumped in bed with Hillary and promoted it and went. I'm like, okay, so now you think instead of being service to us as members or those people as members, you're going to tell them what's good for them. That is, to me, if you're representing your group, you don't need to represent the group.
Right.
You don't need to say, hey, these are all my members now, and I'm going to use my clout to do what we want politically, right? So yeah, I don't believe in what they do. I'm not going to be a PIP member. I'm not going to be a member. So the problem is when you have the same argument where you have, say, the teachers union. Okay? Does the teachers union represent the kids?
No.
Do they represent education?
No.
They represent the teachers.
Yes.
Nothing wrong with that.
No.
Go teachers, right? Represent the teachers. Workforce issues, pay issues, instructional time, all of those things. Represent the teachers. Problem is with in the press, in the public, when they try to pretend like we're advocating for the children. Not the same thing.
No.
Not the same thing. So, and then I've got a problem. And the union leadership isn't necessarily saying what all of those teachers want, all of those educators want.
Can't.
They're not necessarily saying that, and sometimes absolutely not. If you've got a Republican who's a high school teacher, and my kids had a few of them, they felt like they had to be silent in the workplace.
That's true.
But they're there. Well, absolutely their union doesn't represent them. So in a country where Donald Trump is president, in a country that has two major parties, the presumption that everybody needs to be a Democrat if you are in this union, everybody should support Democrats if you're in this union, that's a problem. And then when the union has the mechanism to collect all these vast sums of money and give 98% of it to Democrats and hold them accountable and beholden, that's a real issue.
Yeah, that's all kind right. of scary.
So the bill is the workaround against the Supreme Court, and it's going to make it easier for people to be signed up into the union and get pre-collected, and it's going to be harder for them to opt out.
Mm.
So
even though the U.S. Supreme Court said, you know, they have a right to get out.
Yeah, it's the law of the land, folks.
Yeah, why are they doing this workaround?
Because they're losing members and they want the money.
Too bad. Yeah, so sad.
All right. Enough of that. We're beginning that. But we'll be back with that. That topic is incredibly important. And if the legislature passes this and the governor signs it, I don't know how you don't get collusion. Right? Should we throw the collusion word out there? I don't know how that is possible without a conflict of interest.
Totally.
If it were a development entity or a consortium that had this much clout, there would be up in arms. There'd be riots.
You're right.
In that regard. So, all right, last topic. I want to talk a little bit about campaign finance reform. It's in the news again. There's a few legislators coming up. There's a joint resolution in the House. There's a joint resolution in the Senate. Dan Rayfield, you asked, is a Democrat from Corvallis who signed on to this and out of the House. A couple of senators, Tim Knopp, he's a Republican. He's from Bend. Mark Haas, he's a Democrat from Beaverton. Those are both senators. And the perceived problem is it's costing too much for campaigns to run.
Totally.
And the more they cost, then the more the money is influencing.
Sure.
And is that a good thing for our society?
No.
And this is one of those things where things that we value as citizens, that we value as free citizens in America, kind of conflict. We're like, well, this is kind of a problem. The governor's race was like $10 million, $12 million on each side to raise to run for governor. Even the city council races are tens of thousands of dollars now, where they used to be able to run for city council for like, yeah.
The cost of flyers.
Yeah, $5,000 or something. And so they're looking for reform. So what is reform to you? Campaign finance reform.
That's a tricky one. For me, sounds like campaign finance reform is no large corporations or foreign entities contributing.
Foreign, you mean out of the country?
Yeah.
Okay. So getting money out of politics and, you know, on a surface, on a bumper sticker, that sounds great.
Yeah.
The problem is it's going to bump against our rights to free speech. And the Oregon Supreme Court, 1997, said that political gifting, political donations are free speech. So you can't infringe upon that.
Okay.
So you need to change the Constitution. And that's what this is about. They want to change the Constitution so that cities, counties, some of these smaller jurisdictions can restrict the amount of money that's spent in politics. Okay?
Okay. But if
so
they,
that's reform to some people.
Okay.
I mean, some people, and I had this a little bit of an argument, but on Facebook where they don't think corporations should be able to donate. They can't donate. They shouldn't be able to donate. They're not people, even though the Supreme Court says legally they're a U.S. entity, treated the same as a person. The corporation is a person. The taxed as people, as separate entities, and so forth.
Well, if I was the CEO of, say, Nike, mm-hmm. And I wanted to donate $10,000 to a campaign. I should have that right.
Oh, sorry, I got those numbers wrong. By the way, you can find this in the Salem Reporter. $20 million and $19 million. Buehler versus the governor, Governor Brown.
Hmm.
In the last governor, huge. All right. So my response was, that's fine. Don't let corporations donate. But then the unions can't donate. The nonprofits can't donate. The AARP can't donate, right? ASPCA can't donate. That's, NRA can't donate.
That's taking money out of the campaigns, like, for sure.
You can't just say corporations are bad. I happen to be a fan of corporations and the role they play in a capitalist society.
Mm-hmm.
Despite what some of our national legislators think, we do have the highest standard of living in a capitalist society than we do in any other.
This is true.
It's never a perfect system. Adam Smith didn't say it was a perfect system, but it did create the highest standard of living in the world. So anyway, so we need to talk about this. Maybe we'll have one of these senators or representatives on. Anytime you're restricting it, you run into that First Amendment right and you run into the Supreme Court. So they have to go the constitutional route.
So when they started the campaign finance reform, what was that, in the early 90s? People were complaining about that?
It seems like it's ongoing. It seems to me like they're always talking the federal level and the local level. They do want to identify, part of this is they want to identify where does the money come from, and if there's an ad, who paid for it. I always thought that was the law of the land. Honestly.
Yeah, you have to put the disclaimer on.
But okay. If you want to write $1 million check to a PAC fund, a political action committee, and then they buy the ads, you can do that. It doesn't even have to be related to the campaign, and that's where you get into the gray area, right? So you get the Koch brothers and all these other things. So let's touch on this again in a week or so.
Okay.
We'll see how this follows through the legislative session. So interesting stuff. Let us know what you think. We appreciate you being here with Newsmakers with Brent and Dave. This is Brent DeHart, Dave Morin, 1430 KYKN. You stay with us because Salem's listening.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.